Hi, I'm Kathy Forsty, music director at KC Cafe Radio. We're very happy to have singer-songwriter David G. Smith as an artist on KC Cafe Radio. We're proud to be playing his songs from his album First Love on the station. First Love is David's sixth album and features Mary Gaucher and Keb Moe. David's songwriting has been compared to James Taylor and Kris Kristofferson, with a little of Kieran Cain mixed in. His style has been described as dirt funk filled with intimate ballads. Thanks, David, for taking the time to talk with me here on KC Cafe Radio.
Yeah, thank you so much for inviting me. I appreciate it.
You were here in Kansas City a couple months back doing some shows, and I got to hear you play. You do an amazing set. How many shows do you typically do a year?
It varies a little bit, but I'm over the 100 mark for the last 3 to 4 years, and I anticipate that number going up.
Really?
Once we get the new album out, and I'm restructuring my own company. It's Heyday Music, and it's going to include a more people on staff and involved in helping me manage this mess I call my music business.
Are you going to have other artists, or is it just mostly yourself that's going to be on that?
Almost always a solo show, unless I'm doing maybe a fundraiser or a release show of some sort. 95% of the time I'm performing solo.
And when you aren't on the road, where's your home base?
I gravitate between Eastern Iowa, a little town called Bluegrass, and Nashville. I have a 20-year and counting history with either living or working in Nashville.
Do you have like a home there? Or?
I've got a home in Iowa. I'm never here. They tell me it's nice. and then I do stay with a number of friends and family members that live in Nashville.
That's great.
Yeah, it is.
Let's talk a little bit about your songwriting. I know that first of all, I just want to say you're an amazing guitar player. When I saw you live, I was just blown away by your guitar playing. Did songwriting come first, or did guitar playing come first?
I think piano lessons came first.
Really?
I have four brothers and sisters. I'm the oldest. And when each of us hit second grade, piano lessons were mandatory. And so that got the music. And it's a family tradition. All of us play, including our parents and extended family members play. I think with guitar, I taught myself on the needle on the record kind of format. But I think they came together. And I have written all kinds of songs that in all kinds of ways, where I just started out with a title, I just started out with a lyric, a little bit of lyric, I started out with a chorus, or I had a little riff on the guitar going, and I still do play keyboards, and it may come from the keyboard. So, you know, what comes first, the music or the lyric, it's all over the board. Mm-hmm. But early on, I think they came together. As soon as I started picking away on the guitar, that's when the lyrics and the songwriting started to come.
I know, I play a little piano, but it's never been an instrument that came naturally to me. It's an instrument I struggled with, where guitar has just been a natural instrument for me. Do you have the same thing, or are you more drawn to one instrument over the other?
That is an interesting point. I never really thought about that, but I didn't really get the songwriting bug by playing piano first. And if I'm in second grade, I mean, I'm talking about later on being, you know, seventh grade, eighth grade, that I start picking up the guitar. We had a neighbor that would let us borrow his, and that's when the lyrics and the songwriting, you know, came along. But mm-hmm. And later on, though, I played keyboards in an all-original rock and roll band in Denver, Colorado, right before I moved to Nashville. And that band had a four-year run managed by Ed Cassidy, the drummer for Spirit. And that pretty much dates me right there. but I played almost all keyboards, and I was writing a ton of songs on the keyboard then. Mm-hmm. So in a band situation, it seemed like I was more prone to write on the keyboards. But when I went to solo, that's when, you know, again, the guitar was there. And that's what I predominantly write on these days.
Well, you're a heck of a guitar player and writer. Is your other, you mentioned everybody in the family learned to play piano. Has anybody else pursued music as well, or was it, or just you?
Well, in a fashion, and I guess the thing that really trips my trigger is the songwriting itself. So as a songwriter, primarily, no one else in the family has pursued that with good reason. That's a tough, row to hoe. And it's gotten worse since the advent of internet and Napster and everything that's come after that. But I have two brothers, and so one is he could be a studio session player. He actually has worked in Nashville with me. He plays guitar and mandolin. I have another brother who plays all kinds of percussion, and my two younger sisters both got degrees in music.
Wow.
I have a nephew that lives in Nashville. They are he and his wife perform with a very successful group called, and he's made a career out of it. He is actually made in the music business. They're doing very well.
Uh-huh. What was the name of that group again? You broke up as we were talking about them.
They're called Proto Men.
Proto Men. Okay. So, did your parents? What did they do for a living? Did they just love music and wanted you guys to pursue that, or were they musicians themselves?
They were farmers initially, and they were a dairy farm, and they inherited two farms, one from each set of their parents. When I turned 18, my dad told me that he thought I should go to college. He says, I don't think this dairy farming is really going to be, your cup of tea. And he had some good foresight about that kind of thing. And then my mom, she did a number of, was in business for herself over the years. She just had that entrepreneurial spirit about her.
Mm-hmm.
So, she early on sold Avon, she worked for different volunteer organizations, and she eventually got herself into a furniture business that she ran and operated for over 30 years. And Dad eventually bailed out of the farming and went to work for John Deere. As far as their music, Dad kind of let that fall to the back burner for himself. Mom, has sung in the choir forever. She has six siblings of her own that they were on radio early on, before any of them were married. They sang together as a trio and as a duo. And so they had a little more history there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So music is just in the blood then. It's just part of who they are as people.
Pretty much. We call it the family curse.
I don't think it's a curse. It's a blessing, really. So you mentioned that you picked up the guitar around age of, a teenager. Did you start writing right away?
I did. And, of course, about that time, I'm listening to Leonard Cohen. I'm listening to the Beatles. And I listened to a lot of rock and roll. But Van Morrison was in there early on somewhere. And it just amazed me. Joni Mitchell, that mm-hmm. they're coming up with these songs mm-hmm. that, well, I don't know. What do you say other than, they spoke to me
mm-hmm.
as they spoke to an entire generation. To have that environment as you're growing up, in your formative years, it's almost like a lot of us didn't have a chance. It just kind of hit us, between the eyes, all the great music. And some of that music is, it's still around. The good stuff is still around and from our generation. And it was, again, a great environment to be in, and you're always waiting by the radio in those mm-hmm. days about what's new, what's next, and there was an excitement about mm-hmm. that for a teenager, you just kind of tune right into that.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest differences between kids now and kids back when we were younger is that we were like fans of artists, we were like big fans, like we couldn't wait for the newest Joni Mitchell album to come out or James Taylor album to come out. And kids today don't even know the name of the artist they're listening to, That's the real tragedy I find in it.
Well, and the listening experience different. We have an album, we have vinyl, we have artwork, we have liner notes. Sit and listen, it was an experience.
Right, yeah.
And in and of itself.
It was an intimate experience.
Yes. And you were focused on that that event, just having some music on in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And there may have been social media in that you had friends over and you're all doing, you're focused on that listening and you're talking about the artist and the songs. And I'm not sure how much of that is going on these days. You know, I ask my nephews and nieces how they listen to music, and it's usually while they're doing something else.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always plugged into their ear. They don't have stereo systems, and with, you know, big speakers or even small ones, it's just all about the earbud.
Right. Yeah. And like you mentioned, we had the album covers, and you know, when I was a kid, I would sit with my headphones on in front of my stereo and just study that album cover and read every liner note in it. You know, even just not just the lyrics. I'd know who the recording engineer was and who did drums and, you know, all that stuff. So
right.
It's a lot different experience nowadays.
Yeah. And then for me, on the songwriting, you know, I knew who the songs were too, especially. Mm-hmm. Which you might think whoever was singing was a songwriter, but that was not always the case.
Right.
You know, and that always piqued my interest. I mean, Leonard Cohen, yeah, he was the songwriter. But even Joni Mitchell did a Leonard Cohen song. And so that was interesting to me to ferret that stuff out, you know, by looking through the liner notes.
Right. Yeah, for sure. The early albums that you were listening to, which ones do you think were like the biggest influences on you?
Yeah, probably the way I always look at it is it's probably not any one album, but just different songs off of them. And of course, anything that was Beatles,
mm-hmm.
Jimi Hendrix, I loved listening to his innovation. So I had sort of songwriter heroes and I had guitar heroes. And the songwriter, of course, Leonard Cohen early on, the Beatles. I loved the vocals of Crosby, Stills, Nash, as well as their songs. So I love that group harmony thing. And, but boy, there wasn't hardly anybody that didn't come along that didn't influence me in some fashion. Bruce Springsteen later on, and the way he delivered. And within Crosby, Stills, Nash, Steve Stills, as far as a guitar influence.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Duane Allman. I think the show you came to see me, I did a Duane Allman instrumental,
yeah,
called Little Martha.
Mm-hmm.
That just took me. And then Leo Kottke was another one early on that just that finger picking. And then later on, Tommy Emmanuel, mm-hmm. who is I've seen maybe three times live now, and just as a side. Bar on that, Tommy Emmanuel has a protege by the name of Joe Robinson. Joe has played on my last three studio albums. And so it's kind of interesting how things that, you know, what goes around comes around.
Mm-hmm.
And that one of my influences has a protege who now plays on my records. I mean, that's incredible to me.
Yeah, that's awesome. We were talking a little bit about songwriting. Do you ever co-write, or are you always writing songs on your own?
I had a large part of my career, or a substantial part anyhow, was working in Nashville, and that's kind of the way you do things, or write songs there. And so I put in a good 15 years of just almost my entire catalog during that time frame were co-writes, probably over 90%. That's an interesting, I'm not sure that it did me any good because it was a wonderful experience. I wrote songs I would never have written if I didn't co-write. But it's tricky business, and I had to learn. I came in kind of late. I was in my 30s already by the time I moved to Nashville, and I was so used to writing by myself. And I kind of had that writing solo. I had that down. But Nashville was the songwriting capital of the world, and maybe it still is. And anybody who's anybody either commutes there, lives there, somehow works in or with Nashville, And so it was a place to be. And I got thrown right into the co-writing fray. I don't know that I'm that good of a co-writer. But it's like a relationship with another person. You've got to be just as honest all the time, just as forgiving and just as mean. It's got to be an open-hearted, two-way street all the way. And those are the people that I've written my best songs with. And those songs are showing up on my albums. So that's how I know.
Yeah. Are there any co-writes on First Love?
Yes. So the Ocean Soul is a co-write with a couple ladies about where one of them comes from in Northern California. And then Nightlife in the Sticks is with Tom Favreau. And he got a couple songs on the new album coming out. There's some songs there. I think the other ones there, I'm looking at them. I can't tell. No, that yeah. So there's three or four songs there.
Mm-hmm. This is your sixth album. When did you decide I'm going to stop being a Nashville songwriter and start making my own albums?
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to pick up where I left off about the co-writing business for 15 years in Nashville. Mm-hmm. I got to the point where, as a writer, I was trying to guess what Tim McGraw wanted to say. I was trying to guess what Martina McBride would want to say. And it really wasn't a good way for me to go. It wasn't a good route. Some people can write like that, but I'm not good at that. So I got a little bit discouraged back in about 2007, 2008. And here's the event that turned things around for me. I never envisioned myself as an artist. It was all about the song and writing a really good song. So I had gone to all these conferences and song camps and all that in Nashville, or were Nashville connected or something. Well, then a friend of mine told me about a songwriter retreat that was being held in Costa Rica in 2009. And it was going to feature Beth Nielsen Chapman, Daryl Scott, and Mary Gaucher. Now, the draw for me was Daryl Scott and Mary Gaucher. I knew all three of them. I knew who they were and what they'd done. But what Mary and Daryl were doing as independent artists, that really piqued my interest. But still, it was only, I see what they're doing. I love their music. I want to go meet them. And well, I get down there. It's a week-long camp, and we had breakout groups, and they would meet. There's only a dozen of us that were there, and they met with us individually, one-on-one. And all three of them told me, I played them songs that I didn't try to pitch for other artists to record. I just wrote them and just kind of set them on the shelf to collect dust. Well, I started playing them those songs, and they said, "What do you do?" Every one of them asked me, "What are you doing with these songs?" And I said, "Well, I'm not doing anything with them. I just do that kind of, you know, on the side." And every one of them told me, one-on-one, independently, "You need to start recording." Mm-hmm. And it was like this wake-up call, like, "Why?" And because you've got good stuff, you've got the goods to be an artist, which I just didn't, you know, I just didn't think of it like that. I didn't think of my career like that. And so that, I went 3 months later, I was in the studio. And at that same Costa Rica song camp, we were all required to write a song, or at least as close to finish one as we could, and present it at the end of the week. And so I don't write fast, but I wrote a song called Fear. And it's on First Love, mm-hmm. and it's the song. And it actually, the original version has some, you know, a chorus that you really can't play because of FCC regulations. Anyhow, this is the radio version, but that was a song I played it, and by the second chorus, the entire group is singing it with me. And by the end of that song, Beth stood up and said, "I will pitch that song to Tim McGraw." And that means she's going to hand deliver the song to Tim McGraw. Mm-hmm. And then Mary said, "If you want to record that song, I'll sing it with you. I'll come into the studio and sing it with you." And that was the beginning of Mary being on every one of my studio records ever since.
Mm-hmm.
And me turning things around for me from being just a pure songwriter to, you know, 10 years later, putting the artist hat back on, because I'd done this in another lifetime, you know, as a keyboard player and all that. But we even put a record out. But I took that artist hat off for a long time and just focused on this, on the writing. So that was, like I said, about 2009. And 3 months later, we're in to record the first album of six. And I haven't looked back since.
That's awesome. Do you know if Nelson Chapman actually pitched the song to Tim McGraw?
She did. Oh, yeah. I know she, you know, she's the one who wrote the Faith Hill song, This Kiss.
Yeah.
She's got the connection. So, and it's in the mill. It's in the mix. And as often happens with songs, or at least it used to, they can sit in the hopper for quite a while with the artist. And gives them a chance to, you know, to know the song and get used to it kind of make it their own.
Right.
And I learned a long time ago that even if you're Barbra Streisand, you're that great of a singer, not every song is right for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so that comes into play. That comes into play when you're pitching songs to other artists for them to sing. You know, it's got to be in the pocket for them.
Right. Yeah.
And it was just so ironic that I've got all these songs, I mean, hundreds and hundreds of songs that I was writing to pitch to other artists. And I got a lot of them cut. As a matter of fact, I've been very lucky. I don't want to mislead that I didn't get any cuts. There's three different categories of artists. There's the independent artist, there's the major independent, and then there's the major artist. Well, I hit the target on two out of three there. We have a lot of cuts, 40, 50 cuts with major independent artists and independent artists. And so really the last thing I was kind of shooting for was a cut with a major artist. So I'm still pursuing that to some degree, but I don't spend as much time these days pitching like I used to.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're a major artist, so you're doing your own stuff. That's what's important. We talk about songwriting. Do you write every day, or is it you just wait for the inspiration to hit you? How do you approach it?
Yeah, it's an everyday for me. Inspiration, no, it doesn't. I get inspiration from writing every day. But if I sat around waiting for it, no, that's not going to happen. And there's a part that it took me a while, you know, like maybe 20 years to figure out about songwriting. And that's called what I call trust the process. If I show up every day, the song will direct traffic and it'll show itself. And I never worry about that. And so, no, I'm an everyday guy. And, mm-hmm. So that's the best way.
Do you set aside a certain time of day to go and write? Like, are you a better writer in the morning? Or are you a better writer at night? Do you try to eat, you know, have an activity you've done and then try to write? Or is there any kind of a formula to it?
Yeah, I think probably earlier in the day before my head gets full of, you know, that day's life, whatever's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I seem to be most open earlier on in the day. That's especially if I'm starting a song and or looking to create some idea. Earlier in the day. Now, if I'm into a song, that I could be writing on that anytime.
Mm-hmm.
It could be after midnight, I mean, or anywhere in between. So, yeah.
Do you have like an inspiration? Like if you're like searching for something to write about, do you like turn on the TV or grab a book? How do you get your creative juices going?
I probably have a dump truck load of ideas that I've put down on like a recording device, or if it's just lyric, I mean, just paper scattered all over the place with ideas on it. I use about every medium available to songwriters these days. So that includes the computer. I got files and files of ideas. There's some of these inspirational daily quotes that come out that I subscribe to from a couple people. As a matter of fact, one of them is Beth Nielsen Chapman's husband, Bob Sherman. And he sends out something called the Daily Dose. And I have found, I mean, really countless ideas embodied within that one little daily thing he sends out. So it's, you know, and sometimes we'll get, I'll have other, my co-writers will bring it, bring an idea or something too, and that'd be another resource. But it's, you know, and this whole thing about writer's block, I never believed or subscribed to that. It's just, if I'm showing up every day, the muse will just, you know, it will just lay it on me, you know. I don't have trouble contacting you, so.
That's great. I mean, I wish I could say that. Maybe I'm too highly critical of my own abilities. I don't know. But it's like sometimes I'm just like, oh, this is crap, and I just, you know, I'll put it aside, so.
That was one we talked about in Costa Rica, was the editor in all of us. Mm-hmm. And when you're sitting down for the front end of a song, the editor goes to the closet. That's where it belongs. And sometimes you got to write the journey to get to the good stuff. Mm-hmm. And try not to be, I'm always trying not to be judgmental about, because that is the editor, about, oh, that just stinks, or, you know, that's not what, a good way to put this or whatever, but just get it out on paper, because that releases it for me. Mm-hmm. And get it out of my brain, out of my consciousness, so we can clear the way for maybe something that's better.
That's really good advice, just to go ahead and just let it out and write it down. This is your sixth album. First Love is your sixth album. Has your writing evolved, or the recording style evolved? What's the change between your first album that you did and this one?
Yeah, that's a great question. One thing that's changed and evolved has been the production. To answer your question, though, about the songs, I've gotten more issues oriented with this last, with First Love, with the one before that. But I know I'm going to cycle back to, it's kind of like this pendulum back and forth between writing about real songs for real people. I think that's kind of a cliche out there these days, but it's something I used, you know, almost 10 years ago about how to promote my stuff. It's about real life experiences and looking for, and if there's an undercurrent of hopefulness, I think, for the most part. I mean, I like to joke that I can play 2 hours worth of Mood Killers and just make you feel bad, you know, but the feedback I get that tells me I'm getting the job done about is that there's that hopeful undercurrent in all of these songs that I write. Mm-hmm. So that has been a constant from album one to album six. Again, a little more issues oriented with a couple of the third and the fourth album. You know, First Love, maybe that's part of this transition. I don't write love songs very often. I mean, I sort of went every once in a great while if I got a good idea. But First Love, the title track, that's about love law. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, through a composite plus some personal experience there. On the other hand, I turned around and wrote something called Lost in You. That's a love song. Mm-hmm. And so I have kind of cycled. I mean, I kind of, you know, and I'm thinking about this new release coming up here. I don't think there's one love song out of, there's going to be 12 songs on it. I don't think there's one love song on it. So I think First Love, it tackled that subject again, which I hadn't done in a very long time. In the Silence, that's a love song to my father. He has Alzheimer's. And the love theme carries throughout. And the last song called Carrie, that's a lifelong friend. And, you know, that again, written in the spirit of love to her. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's quite, you know, I didn't really realize that until you asked me about it. A lot of these, you know, not life in the sticks, that's just goofing off, you know, but an Ocean Soul was really the love of the ocean that one of the co-writers where she grew up in California. So yeah, there's a love theme that definitely permeates this last album.
Yeah, I had a songwriter tell me that every song is a love song. So, I don't know, in some way, I guess every song can be a love song to something or about something. So the song you just mentioned, In the Silence, which is a song that was inspired by your dad and your uncle, right?
Yes.
The proceeds, you have like proceeds going to a charity for that?
Yes. And we did a release party and a combination release party and a fundraiser for First Love. And we raised a few thousand dollars for the local chapter. This is part of what I call give back. It's a give back component to my Hey Dave music, you know, endeavor. And it's very important to myself and to my wife. And people, we've got a page set up. It's on my homepage, davidgsmithmusic.com, where we chronicle what we've been doing for the past decade as far as consciousness raising, fundraising, benefits for a variety of causes. And to tell you the truth, that's what powers my career. It's about the give back. Mm-hmm. I am very lucky to be in this position. A lot of musicians are struggling just to make, you know, pay bills. And I figured out sort of a model for myself in this DIY world that allows me to do this give back consistently. And I've got the latest posting up there. If you go out to the homepage, it's at the bottom of the homepage under giving back. And there's a little link there that takes you to the page that, you know, gives you that chronology.
Mm-hmm. And that's davidgsmithmusic.com. Well, let's talk a little bit about First Love. Where did you record this album? Was this done in Nashville as well?
Yeah, one of the magic things, the many magic things that can happen in Nashville are the people you get to work with. And yeah, it was done at Blue Man Studios in Nashville. I was referred to the producer there, the person that not only owns the studio, but he also produces. And his name is Blue Miller.
Mm-hmm.
Blue was a... You might not know the name right off the bat, but he was in the Miller Gibson Band. If you're a country music fan, you might know that name. And then right after Gibson Miller broke up, Blue started to work with India Arie. And he is a co-writer on her breakout song called Ready for Love.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking for somebody who had a Muscle Shoals connection. And about two albums before this, before First Love, somebody told me about Blue. And that he had worked with another hero of mine whose name was Barry Beckett, who ran Muscle Shoals for years. And well, Barry had passed away, so I couldn't approach him, but so I went to Blue and we just hit off right away. I mean, we became fast and quick friends, and he has gone a long way. He's so brilliant on so many levels, but he went a long way in changing my sound and bringing it up to where we are with First Love right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, Nashville Blue Man Studios.
He also brought Kib Mo in to work with you as well. How did that happen?
you heard Mary's story. And then so we were working on I Can't Tell. And Blue was in the control room, and I was setting up like a couple of mics out in the recording area. And we got, you know, a speaker system between us, and we're talking back and forth. And I just kind of made an offhand comment about, you know, somebody like Kib Mo would really sound good on this song. And Blue said, "What'd you say?" No, I said somebody like Kib Mo I think would sound good with some slide guitar on this. Well, little did I know, he had just met Kib Mo through India, Ari, and of course that's part of the magic of Nashville. You know, only in Nashville would something like that happen. Well, it turns out Kib lives around the corner from Blue, and even Blue didn't know that. And we found that out later. So he called up. He had Keb's number, and Kib said, "Oh yeah, I'll come and play." And we just thought we're thinking, "Oh yeah, right." He said. So Kib said, "Call my manager," and Kib gave Blue the number. So we called him, and they said, "Okay, 6 months from now, Kib has an open day on that day." And so we said, "Okay, yeah, we'll book that." Well, we're both looking at each other like, this will never happen. No, you know, he's a busy guy. And so, but 6 months to the day, Kib was in the studio, showed up. Man, he just tore it up. And it was great. It was great.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah. It's an awesome song. I like that song a lot. And then you also worked with Buddy Munlock. How did that happen?
Well, Buddy and I met back in 2000, and I rented some room, like a songwriting room, from him, from his wife, actually, at the time, Carol Elliott. And but I met Buddy through that experience. One thing led to another, and when I wanted to record my first album, Buddy asked if he could co-produce it. And so the track called Fear is a derivative of that first album, where I put the original version. And if you want to hear the original version, again, go on out to davidgsmithmusic.com and you'll get the picture. But anyhow, so we carried that song forward to this First Love album. And so that's how Buddy was involved on the first album and the last one that I put out. We've been friends now for, what, almost 20 years. You know, again, it's one of those things, when you're in Nashville, you're bumping elbows with all kinds of people all the time, every day. You see Emmylou Harris over at Kroger shopping in the next aisle. You see Keith Urban, you know, over at the Walmart or whatever. And everybody's so cool about that. They don't go German them or you know, they just leave them alone and let them live their lives, you know, on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. But, and so that's kind of mm-hmm. cool, and that's kind of magic too. But then the people you know, you have a chance to work with, I mean, it's just great. So Buddy's another one. He's a phenomenal songwriter himself.
Yeah, he is. I've heard him several times. He's amazing. You have a new album coming out next year. Can you tell us a little bit about that one? And have you finished it, or are you still working on it?
We did finish it, and a little bit of a story there. I'll relay. We finished tracking a duet with Mary Gauchet called Shine this past January. Well, about 10 days after that, my producer, Blue Miller, ended up in the hospital. Fast forward, he's been in and out of the hospital. It was with a brain bleed. And it was very serious, and he ended up not making it, and he did pass away this past August. So we have had to delay release on this new album, and it's going to be called Who Cares, and it's a title track. So we had to delay. So right now the album will projected to be, it should be out, you know, early, the first quarter of 2019. So the wheels are kind of back up turning again for releasing this, and it'll yeah.
Great. We're looking forward to that. We'll for sure be playing tracks from that on KC Cafe Radio. I can't wait. Yeah. Other than the new album, you any other plans for the new year?
This whole year has been sort of more about regrouping and a little bit of reorganization for Hey Dave Music. There will definitely be one or two or five or six tours to follow this release. I'm working with some people on the West Coast that will help promote and book these tours. I believe I might be getting some help elsewise too about that. So definitely some touring, some serious touring. And that's why I was indicating before, probably the number of days will go up, you know, from 100, over 100. Because we were a little bit, like I say, a little bit behind with the release, the new release and getting that done. And I'm raring to go. I'm raring to get out there on the road. My wife comes with me sometimes. She loves the adventure of it. And we have a lot of people that we'd like to visit around America. And so we're pretty excited.
Yeah, I'm excited for you. If you get a chance to see David, he's an amazing live performer, amazing guitar player. I thoroughly enjoyed the show I saw. Just blown away by your songs and your guitar playing. It was a really fun time. So I want to thank you again for taking the time to chat with me today. I'm going to let everybody know they can find you at davidgsmithmusic.com. Here you can buy his music directly at his website, or you can also find it on the usual sites like CD Baby, Amazon, and iTunes. And then you can also friend David on Facebook and Twitter. Am I leaving anything out there?
No, you pretty much covered it.
Great. Well, thanks again for taking the time, David. It's wonderful. His new album is called First Love, David G. Smith. Please check him out at davidgsmithmusic.com.
Well, thank you, Kathy, and thank you, KC Cafe Radio.